Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com, the best podcast dedicated to the Arsenal women's team, because it's the only podcast dedicated to the Arsenal women's team. You're here with your host, Tim Stillman, for this week's episode. And I say this week's episode rather than this month's episode, because we're going to have 2 episodes this month. That's right. And that's why I'm going with a slightly cold intro, because we had 2 guests that we're recording this month. And I didn't know at the time of recording the first guest, who you'll hear from presently, whether that was going to form one podcast, one kind of bumper edition, or whether we were going to do 2. And as it happens, I spoke to both Max Jones and Aidan Small from Arsenal.com earlier today, and that interview was frankly fabulous, was really, really interesting, really insightful about kind of the social media strategy behind the Arsenal women's team from Arsenal's point of view, the online content, procuring kind of accurate historical data about the women's team. That's a big issue in women's sport, not just women's football, really, the kind of the lack of archiving in history, because, you know, up until recently, women's sport just kind of happened and nobody was really keeping track of what was happening. And so in terms of Arsenal women, for example, you've got all these players who've had hundreds and hundreds of appearances and nobody was really tracking it or kind of keeping a tally. And so you'll hear from Max Jones from Arsenal.com, who was given the wonderful job of rectifying that a couple of years ago, and it's an ongoing project, but and we had a good discussion about how that data informs the content, kind of having a house style, how the content on Arsenal.com has changed, because this season, for example, for the first time, pretty much all the Arsenal women games are viewable online now, which is a big, big step change for the WSL. Whereas, you know, even last season, most of the games weren't on. And up until a couple of years ago, really the Twitter feed, the Arsenal official Twitter feed, was the only way, unless you were at the game, of keeping up with what was actually happening. So we have a really good discussion about how all that changed and how the kind of Arsenal women brand and identity, particularly on social media, is kind of developed, and all of the planning that goes into it. And it's a really fascinating discussion, and it ran for about 40 minutes or so. So we decided to make that its own episode. And we'll also be hearing from Leah Williamson as well at the end of the episode. So when I was first started talking to Max and Aidan, I didn't know whether that was just going to be one episode or two. So I didn't do an intro with the guests, which is what I usually do, hence this ramble at the beginning. But as I say, really, really grateful to Max and Aidan from Arsenal.com for their time. This is, like a lot of the Arsenal women content you're going to be seeing in the next kind of few weeks and months, this is something that has been in the works for quite a long time. I've been discussing doing this episode with Max and Aidan for ages, and obviously it's been really difficult because we all do the same job, right? We all kind of produce content about the Arsenal women's team, and that means our schedules are very much dictated by the games, and it's been very difficult to find a time to do it. But obviously there's no games now, so that's kind of removed that obstacle in a way. We were able to kind of hook up with Max and Aidan very easily. Really, really grateful to them and to Arsenal as well for kind of green lighting it, and, you know, as usual, just being completely calm and relaxed about the prospect of me speaking to club employees. And as I said, you'll also hear from Leah Williamson on this episode. Leah, again, this was kind of an interview I had in the works for quite a few months, but with the kind of the grind of games and fixtures, it's sometimes it's difficult to find that time to actually sit down and do it. Leah, you might have seen on Ask Blog News, I spoke to Leah, you know, at the time of recording about 10 days ago now, and we had a very kind of data-led piece. I looked into her data for this season and spoke to her about her game and how it's developed, and I was really, really happy with how the article came out. And as Max and Aidan say on this episode, it's always great talking to Leah. I'm actually going to release all of the audio of that interview on the next episode, which will come out next week. I could only really use, just for the sake of the word limit, about half of what Leah said in that interview that I wrote up on Ask Blog News. So what I'm going to do in the next episode next week is release the full audio, because it's such a fantastic interview, and Leah's such an engaging person to listen to, and has great insights on not just her own game but the game in general. But on this episode, kind of going with a new feature that Pippa and I dreamed up, which is about kind of just asking the players questions about their teammates, a fairly fun quick fire feature. Now obviously that feature might be slightly difficult to put out in every episode at the moment, because we don't have as much access to the players as we did, again because there are no games, but we're not completely cut off from access to the players, so hopefully that's something we'll be able to kind of weave in and out of the episodes until everything starts up again. But really, really grateful to Leah for her time. So on this episode, you're going to hear from Aidan and Max from Arsenal.com next, and then you'll hear from Leah on her teammates. And in the next episode that's coming out next week, we'll be talking to Jen O'Neill from She Kicks magazine, who I'm sure most of you are very familiar with, kind of the absolute godmother of English women's football and English women's football content. She's been running She Kicks magazine for over 20 years now. And we're just going to have a general chat with Jen just about the current situation, what it might mean for clubs in the WSL and a bit lower in the women's pyramid. And then on that episode, we'll also run, it's about a 15-minute interview that I did with Leah about her game and about some of the data that she's that her performances have produced this season. So without further ado, here's me talking to Max Jones and Aidan Small from Arsenal.com. Hope you enjoy. Okay, I'm delighted to be joined by two august gentlemen from Arsenal.com, Aidan Small and Max Jones. Gentlemen, thank you for joining the show.
Absolute pleasure, Tim. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers for having us on, Tim.
First of all, obviously I've given your names there and the fact that you work for Arsenal.com. If I start with you, Max, can I just ask you maybe to introduce yourself, outline your role for Arsenal Media, particularly with the Arsenal Women, and maybe how you came to work for Arsenal?
Yeah, okay. So I'm a social media editor for Arsenal Digital, which means that I'm part of the team posting daily on the Arsenal accounts. I primarily work across the men's social media, but also help Aidan with the big picture content and the big set pieces on the women's account. I guess perhaps the most relevant thing for this podcast is that I'm keeping track of all of the stats. So anytime you see anything go out about a player reaching 50 appearances, I've been the one doing all of that, tallying up. So yeah, it's a lot of diligent note taking and stuff like that on a Monday morning after a weekend game, but yeah, that's what I've decided to spend my time doing, and it's been very good. In terms of how I got involved with Arsenal, I actually studied sport journalism at the University of Brighton, and while I was on that course, after my second year there was an opportunity to do a placement year at Arsenal. So I did that during the 2014-15 season, where I covered something like 120 games in a calendar year, because I was doing the women's games, the academy games and the first team games as well. And yeah, I've been kept on since then. So it's just been a case of getting more and more involved as the years go by. And like I said, now I'm primarily working for the first team content, but yeah, also pitching with the women's stuff. And Aidan actually had a similar sort of journey to me, so I'll let him take over from there.
Yeah, so I've been with Arsenal for 2 years now, working as a club reporter and heading up Arsenal Women's social channels. And I basically originally joined the club on a year-long internship, similar to Max, following my second year at the University of Brighton, studying sport journalism. And basically on this break from my studies, basically had the incredible opportunity of covering every men's, women and academy fixture over the course of the 2018-19 season. And similar to Max, I think I must have covered well over 100 games that year. So you certainly see your fair share of football. And since then, I've stayed on with the club while I finished my third year studies. So it's been another busy year for me.
And so does the club, you both kind of from University of Brighton, right? Does Arsenal have like a specific kind of deal with them, or is that just a coincidence?
I think I was the 10th student maybe to come from the University of Brighton, so that they sort of struck up a partnership back in maybe mid 2000s, and just kept it going from there. So they'd send one student each year to Arsenal, give him a taste of it, get them to do all of the dog's body work. But obviously as a student, you're happy to be out of a lecture room, to be honest. So we got, both Aidan and I got stuck in as much as we could, and we've been fortunate enough to have been kept on. There's also another guy, Connor Armstrong, who you may know. He's a bit of a Twitter celebrity these days, but he came from University of Brighton as well, and Nick Brumsack as well, who's just left the club. So there are quite a few of us, so we're hoping that partnership can continue.
And Aidan, if I kind of come over to you now, can I ask, because obviously you do the socials, and that includes kind of particularly the match day socials, probably the most visible part of your job anyway. What does a typical match day look like for you when Arsenal women play? What particularly are you in charge of, and who do you work with typically?
Yeah, so on a typical match day, I'll provide our social media coverage across Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So basically starting from first thing in the morning right through to our final post of the day. And during my first season with the club, I was also responsible at the time for producing the match report, updating the website and conducting post-match interviews on top of that. So you're certainly kept busy in your student year. But since then, we've recruited another student from the Uni of Brighton scheme, and he's been able to help us ease the workload a little. And that kind of helped us to provide, some more detailed and focused coverage across our social channels. And then, on a match day, from a communications perspective, you've got Rebecca James and David Moat, who often, assist you if there's any key talking points on the day, with things such as injuries, and also assisting the rest of you guys in the press box with getting your interviews and the like. But in terms of our match day coverage, typically we'll schedule most of our tweets and an Instagram post the day before to save yourself some extra work in the morning and not getting up at 7 o'clock just for the sake of it. You've got to do it if you're working the odd late game here and there. But once we're about 3 hours away from kickoff, that's when our coverage typically shifts to a greater focus of live content, with things like, the arrival photos of the ground, the team stepping off the coach, checking out the pitch, team news, the kind of stuff you can't really pre-plan. And when you're at that stage, it's pretty much non-stop for the rest of the day from there. You'll be making match day graphics for team news, halftime and the final whistle on Photoshop, filming warm-ups for Twitter and our Instagram story, providing live tweets for the game, and kind of reacting to any moments that give us the opportunity to drive engagement and interact with our fans. And I think that final part is the thing I enjoy most on a match day, at least, being reactive to moments, being creative on the spot, that's, in a way that's almost become synonymous with the Arsenal men's account over the past few years.
Yeah, there was a tweet I particularly like. I can't remember what game it was recently, but I think Viv scored, and you managed to upload a very recent interview that she'd done with Lisa Evans, where Lisa Evans just says her whole name.
Yeah, Viviana Margarita Marina Astrid Minamot.
That's it. I liked that one. And Aidan, with the match day socials and particularly the Twitter feed here, obviously there's been a big change in the WSL this year, in that all of the games are now televised and people can see them, particularly and that's particularly important for fans overseas. And really, I think this is the first time, because of that, like, Arsenal women have really, really been able to tap into the kind of the more overseas market. has like the approach, particularly to the match updates and the match day socials, changed as a result of that? Because previously, even last season, quite often Twitter was literally the only way for people to keep up with what was happening. Has there been a change in approach, or have you just taken the view to keep doing the same thing?
No, absolutely. There's definitely been a massive change in approach, I think, with regards to our social tone. I think when I first joined at the tail end of the 2017-18 season, as you say, there were far fewer games on TV, you know, meaning our Twitter feed and yours, to be honest, were the go-to spots for instant updates on the game. And that meant tweeting about even the smaller details of the game, such as half chances, nice bit of build-up play, and kind of any extra information that helps to build a clearer picture of the game, if you like. But I think with more games being shown on BT Sport and the BBC Red Button now, plus the introduction of the FA Player, that need for updates on smaller details of the game have kind of vanished, and the numbers online certainly show that. And I think as a result, we've shifted the tone of our social coverage. Whereas previously, you'd maybe describe the goal in great detail, knowing fans might not even see it until, you know, the Monday morning when highlights packages are released, you know, later the weekend. Now the vast majority of our fans will be watching the game live, and WSL account will tweet the footage out within minutes. So that original need for that extra detail isn't quite there as much anymore. And I think this means that we'll often use these kind of big moments to drive engagement and draw a reaction from our fans instead. Whereas previously we'd maybe tweet upwards of 30 times during a game, I think now we're far more selective of the moments that we choose to tweet. And this means capturing, I'd say, the emotion of the goal rather than the detail. Mm-hmm. And trying to relate to kind of the fan culture of following a game online. I think a lot of the planning and forward thinking goes into that throughout the week as well. Often, like myself, Max and Connor will spitball ideas throughout the week, you know, good, bad and absolutely dreadful. And you see what sticks. And that's the good thing. We kind of shoot each other down if it's an awful idea. And if it's a good one, then you roll with it throughout the week. And I think that's how often how tweets that appear reactive on a match day happen, because we've got the idea ready to go. It's written up in a little text edit box, and it's ready to copy and paste. And, you know, as you said, for example, earlier this season, we recorded a video for our What Do You Know YouTube series. And in that video, Lisa Evans said Viv's full name, much to the delight of Viv in the video. And we were playing City in the Conti Cup that weekend, so I'd decided in the office on the Friday that if Viv scores, rather than announcing the goal in the typical fashion of using a GIF, that we'd use that video instead. And it kind of takes the tweet from being a standard goal announcement, something that, you know, just passes by another tweet, into something that instantly becomes a shareable piece of content that can potentially be used again. And since then, I know every time Viv scores now, we're being peppered with that video in the replies. So it's putting our view counter up every time they use it. So yeah, it's that's worked.
Just to jump on the back of that before you move on, Tim, I think Aidan sort of mentioned it there, but the women's account in the last 12 months has probably mirrored what the men's account did as well. I don't know how far back you can remember, but certainly in the early days of Twitter, the men's account was literally minute by minute commentary. There was no emotion behind what was being said. It was just black and white text, rarely ever photos used. We made a conscious decision about 4 years ago with that, where we thought, you know what, we're tweeting too much. People are already seeing what's going on. You know, if they're not watching it on Sky or BT, then they've got a stream up. So we need to add something different. We need to add something extra that they're not getting anywhere else. So that's where the emotion of these tweets comes in. And as Aidan said, it is all planned out. Like there are some times where you will legitimately think on the spot. Say it's a really late winner, that's when you're at your most creative and you're at your most under pressure. But on the whole, we are planning these out, and it all fits into our approach on social media, which is think like a fan but act like a club. So we want to make sure that we're trying to get all of that fan sentiment within every single one of our tweets. We miss a chance in the last minute, we're just as devastated as all of the fans who are watching. You know, we score a late goal, brilliant, that's great, let's celebrate it as much as we can, let's see what content we've got from before. But yeah, there is a lot of thought that goes into it, and I guess people who are listening to this podcast who have been in charge of a social media account know exactly what that is, but I think quite often it's a bit of a misunderstood role, and there is a lot of thought and creativity that does go with it.
And that moves me on nicely, actually, to my next question, which I'll go to Aidan first, but Max, if you want to jump on the back again, please do. But I spoke to Gemma Avery a couple of seasons ago. Gemma was David Moat's predecessor. She did a year as the kind of marketing manager, because Faye White, I believe, was on maternity leave, and I did an interview with her, and we were talking about like the branding of the women's team, and the kind of, I guess, the thin line between making them part of the club, but also giving them their own distinct style and their own distinct voice. And it's interesting to see how different clubs manage this. So Man City, for example, made a decision a couple of seasons ago to merge their social channels, which personally I think is a rubbish idea and it doesn't really work, but that's kind of up to them and if it works for them. So in terms of the social media branding, is there a distinction, like a conscious distinction? And what is it like, I guess, trying to find that thin piece of land between the women being part of the club but having their own distinct identity?
Yeah, to be honest, I think Arsenal Women's kind of house style on social media has become very similar to the men's account with regards to the way that we announce our goals, kind of cover a match day, deliver signing announcements, and I guess, you know, as Max said as well, play to the crowd of our supporters. I think we want our account to be somewhere that fans can kind of come to for updates and all the latest information, but we also kind of want to be an extension of their fandom and capture the emotions that we know they're feeling. And by doing that, fans will become more likely to continually engage with your content. You know, you don't want to appear tone deaf. And as the club, why wouldn't you want to match the emotions that fans are, you know, so obviously feeling when you score a goal or grab a last minute winner? And yeah, as you say, I think this is in line with the men's account. It's something that we have really looked to merge between the two. And I think that social tone has been very successful for the men's account over recent years, and I think that's allowed some of the tweets from our account to be some of the most shared tweets ever from a football account. You know, that few tweet recently was posted when Liverpool's unbeaten run came to an end is now the most, you know, popular tweet ever from a football club, surpassing Leicester City's, you know, winning the Premier League. And we've adopted a very similar tone on the women's account as well. I think since then we've become the largest women's team account in Europe for 10 consecutive months, and I think most importantly, it seems that our fans respond really well to our content too.
Yeah, I think also what we've noticed, especially this season and last season, is we have a lot of fans for the women's team who have started supporting Arsenal Women because of certain players. So you've got players like Miedemar, like Daniel van der Donk, and you see so many of these fan accounts going round. You know, it's proper football Twitter, as we call it on the men's accounts, but that's starting to spread now into women's football, and you're getting all of these dedicated super fans who are demanding lots of specific player content. And I think that's probably been the biggest development, certainly since Aidan started working for us. So in the last 2 years, we focused lots on trying to build up, maybe not build up, build up's the wrong way, but showcase, I guess, the different characters within our squad. So, you know, you've got someone like Kim, who's just immensely dedicated, but would we put her in front of a camera to get her to, you know, mess around a bit? Probably not, because that's not the sort of person that she is. But would we do that with a Mitch? Would we do that with Lisa Evans? Absolutely we would, because it plays into their strengths. It plays into what the fans want to see. With Kim, for example, we can put out a best goals compilation of her because she's scored so many. And we can do a serious sit-down interview with Kim because she's a great talker and she loves getting her point across in those sorts of interviews. Sure, she can have fun as well when we do get her on camera in a What Do You Know or whatever, but we know that she'd much prefer to be seen as a more professional or more responsible, I guess, player. So yeah, it's all about finding out about those players and making sure that we're showing off the best side of them.
I think building off from that as well, I think as Max mentions there, the personalities of the players are one of the big things that really dictates our social coverage. I think when you look at the men's team as well, there's so many phrases that we've got for particular men's players. You know, back when Iwobi was here, it was the, you know, big 17. Number of things we do with Laka, like the trumpet emoji, little things that you tie to players to make it a really nice shareable bit of content. And when you see that stuff, you instantly recognize it to the player. And that's something that, as the women's account has developed over the past, you know, couple of years and shifted towards that social tone, and as Max mentioned, there's more fans of players rather than fans of clubs a lot online now, and fans of national teams more so, that we've kind of tapped into that potential of player personalities. And as Max says, you know, when we refer to Kim Little online, it's often Captain Little, and it's often a far more professional you know, outlook when we're tweeting about Kim. And then with other players, you know, we tap into the idea of Viv being the GOAT. God knows how many times I've used the GOAT emoji over the last year now, and simple, you know, little things like that. And you tap into little things, and Danielle van der Donk, for example, being known as running, you know, 100 miles every single game, and little things like that, and her getting involved in little scraps on the pitch and things like that. You tap into all of those little personalities, and I think that's the stuff that fans like to see. That's the stuff that fans tweet about. So as a club, you know, why not tap into that as well? Why not react to it and play into that side of things?
And on the point about kind of player fandoms, by far and away the most popular episode we've ever had in one of these podcasts is the one we did on the Dutch players. The listener numbers were kind of off the charts for that one. Is there, because I know this happens a lot in with men's team social media accounts, that there's an occasional sense of collaboration, because effectively you're not competing with each other, right? You've got your fans and they're not going to move clubs, and so there is like that sense of collaboration. Is it the same with some of the women's accounts? And I guess I'd kind of add into this question before I let you answer it, but my sense with Arsenal, you know, having been around a few other kind of WSL clubs, is that Arsenal come off to me as much more relaxed in this kind of sphere, particularly when it comes to media and stuff like that and socials, because I think the brand of Arsenal Ladies and Arsenal Women is really strong and has been there for a long time, whereas there are a lot of other clubs who are just beginning to invest in their women's teams and just beginning to build those brands. So is there a collaboration with other clubs at all over things like socials or online content?
I think definitely in ways of, I can't say that we as Arsenal Women directly communicate with other clubs over their social media strategies, but I think the thing that we're always looking to do online is trying to grab inspiration from elsewhere. And if someone else is doing something well and it seems like they're working on something and it's working for them online, then of course, you know, we'll take a look at that and see if we can implement it for us as well. I think if you're running a social media account, you've got to be switched on to these kinds of trends. And you've got to be ready to jump on them the moment that they're popular. Is, you know, to be honest, with social media, it's the way. If you leave it a day too late, then often the moment has already passed, you know?
And Max, I'm going to come to you a bit now, and a little bit more around your role, particularly when it comes to the women's team. I remember having a conversation with Andy Exley, the programme editor, a couple of years ago, and he kind of told me about this, shall we say, large-scale archiving project that you were involved in to get, like, historical stats about the women's team, which are kind of hard to lay your hands on. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that project, what it was, where it came from, and some of the challenges you faced accumulating that data?
Yeah, so I guess we start by saying that at Arsenal we're very fortunate to be part of a club that's so proud of its history and that's been so good at collecting stats since day one. And of course, in the women's case, that means since 1987. So yeah, I mean, this project kind of goes back to 2017, which would have been the 30th anniversary of Arsenal Ladies, or Arsenal Women, as they're now known. So yeah, Claire Wheatley, the general manager, she came to Andy Exley and said basically they're looking at launching their own version of the 100 Club. For those fans who don't know what the 100 Club is, for the men's team. It's basically every player who's made 100 league appearances for the men's team, for the men's first team. So you've got players in there like, you know, Sol Campbell, Kolo Touré, these legendary players. And the idea is that if they wanted to come back to a game at the Emirates, they could. You know, they've got their place in history. They've made 100 league appearances for Arsenal. They get a special tie and they're invited to a game at the Emirates, which they can watch from a box. Usually it's Bob Wilson in there as well to accommodate them. So it's a really nice way of former players staying in touch with Arsenal and still being a part of the club. So obviously, 30th anniversary of Arsenal Women comes around. Claire Wheatley wants to make her own version of it for the women's team, rightly so. They should be given an opportunity to still be a part of the club, because some of these players, you know, have made 500 appearances, the likes of Emma Byrne, and you move on from the club and then that's it. So it's great that they're given an opportunity to be able to still have that legacy on their team. So what we decided was that because they didn't play too many league games back then, we would make it 100 appearances in all competitions. Problem with that is, and I don't know how many people listening in have actually tried looking up appearance statistics from anywhere before probably last season, it's pretty tricky to find any reliable information. You know, players' names get mixed up all of the time. And on the whole, there wasn't really any detailed log of any of the games, really, especially from the spring series as well. I don't know if you've tried looking up anything from the spring series. It's almost like it never happened. So anyway, Andy decides, yeah, do you know what? I'm going to give this a go. So luckily in our office and in the stadium as well, we've got a specific room which is dedicated to all of these match day programs. And ever since 1987, we've been keeping a log of every single Arsenal women's game. So we've got match reports and we've got the appearances, substitutes, goal scorers. So Andy spent a lot of time after hours at work trawling through this information and making tallies on bits of scrap paper. And I think he got all the way back to the start of the 1999-2000 season. So yeah, about 20 years worth. Unfortunately, we've still got another 13 or so years worth to do, which we will get round to eventually. And once we can get the dust off all of those records, but yeah, for now we've got most of the stats that we need. And then once Andy had those, he sent it across to me and I was just able to make sure we had it in digital form. So we've got an Excel spreadsheet that's got appearance stats, goal stats, penalty saves, that sort of stuff. And we've got pretty much every single bit of information that you could probably need on Arsenal Women going back for the past 4 years or so, I reckon. So it's a project that's still going on and it still requires a lot of time, but this quarantine has certainly helped out.
Yeah, and let's hope that the WSL season isn't voided for a number of reasons, but for you chiefly because that means all the stats from this season are wiped out, of course.
Tim, as far as I'm concerned, we've been doing the research, those stats are there. I'm not deleting those.
Fair enough. And do you ever have any players that approach you, you know, past or present, who have a particular interest in their stats, or does that not really happen?
They probably don't approach us, but I imagine when they see it on social media, it's quite useful for them. We often see them whenever we put out a graphic saying 50 appearances or whatever. We often see them ask for that graphic or share that graphic themselves and then put it out. So it's certainly something that they're proud of, and it's a massive resource for the club as well to have this information. You know, we've got a list of the 100 club inside the first team, or sorry, the men's players briefing room, which I believe the women's team can also use now. And it's, you know, it's this big plaque, and on it, it's got all of the names who are in the 100 club chiseled onto it. So when Jen Beattie came to sign for us, you could see that she was nearly going to make it there. Danielle van der Donk, I think, is the most recent, if I'm not mistaken. So her name will be chiseled into this plaque as well. And then, yeah, for years to come, you'll just have Daniel van der Donk's legacy around the Arsenal training ground. So I think from that point of view, it's great for the players. When I was on co-commentary with Louise Quinn for one of the Champions League games, she was ripping it out of me because I had up-to-date goal and appearance stats on Emma Mitchell, and she said, why do you need Emma Mitchell's goals? But yeah, then you've also got the stat which did some really, really big numbers that we never thought would. So I don't know if you know Josh James. He also yes. works on the men's programs as well. So he showed me how he'd been keeping up to date stats for goals and assists throughout the entire Premier League era. I believe it might even stretch further back than that, but yeah, he's got every single goal scorer, every single assist, minute of the goal, the score that the goal, or the score that it was at the time of the goal, and then also how the goal was scored, so right foot, header, you know, volley, left foot, any of that. So I was doing the same thing for the women's team. I thought, yeah, that's going to be a great thing to have. And one day Aidan and I noticed, well, hang on, we've scored the last 10 goals, left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. So we thought, well, this is brilliant. We'll see how long that this can stretch for. So we didn't mention it until I believe it was Jordan Nobbs went yep. and ruined it.
It was.
So, yeah, that was a bit annoying from our point of view, but we still did do massive numbers on that tweet, just because it's such an odd stat to try and keep. The fact that we did for so long, I mean, I guess people appreciated it.
And it's worth noting as well that Jordan got absolutely ripped in the club group chat for ruining that, by the way. So,
And what about, and I guess a question for both of you, the interrelation between stats and content like you were alluding to there. And I know this season there have been like some milestones, for example, and like how does it work in terms of Max, do you nudge Aidan or something and say this player's on 48 goals or you know on 198 appearances? Like how does that interrelation between stats and content play out? And I guess there have been a couple of big examples of that this season, right?
Yeah, so I guess we'll do goals first, because goals is probably easiest for us to tackle just from a content point of view. So someone like Viv, for example, Viv hits 100 goals and she's not too far away. She hits 100 goals. I've actually got a separate spreadsheet just dedicated to every single goal that Viv scored. So essentially, when she gets within, as it's Viv, when she gets within about four goals of it, because she could always score four goals in one game, I would send a list of her 96 goals to a video editor, and one of our video editors within our team at Arsenal Digital would be able to cut together a montage, just so that all that she would need to do is just add on Viv's goals at the end, the goals from the most recent game. So we've already got that bit of content ready to go. In terms of appearances, fans who have gone to Boreham Wood this season would have noticed that players who are hitting 100 appearances or 200 appearances have started receiving special shirts with 100 or 200 on the back. Mm. So that's done as a pre-match presentation before the game now, which is something which never happened until we started keeping these stats. So that's something which makes me really proud. But the way that works is when they get within, let's say, five or so appearances, I'll send an email around, I'll copy an aid in, I'll copy in people from our match day operations team, and I'll just say, look, five games to go. If Jordan appears in all of these games, then she'll rack up 200 appearances, so we just need to be ready on this date to, you know, present her with this shirt. And that's when we put in a graphic request with our design team, they create something, so we're able to get ourselves prepared for a social media announcement, but then also the announcement in person as well, and we're able to do or to make a really big fuss around that at the time. So it's a real team operation, and having all of these stats has certainly helped us, and I hope the football department would say the same as well. I imagine they would.
Yeah, and of course there have been some really nice examples this season as well, like Viv and Aubameyang hitting 50 Arsenal goals in I think the same week. And then, I mean, personally, I know I had content planned for Kim and Jordan hitting 200 games, and the fact that they were able to do it on the same game was absolutely wonderful. I really, there was a part of me that really hoped one of you were saying to Joe, like when they were both on 199, like, you've got to pick them both.
Well, we actually, I think before that game, we actually had a press conference up at Colney with Joe, and I was asking the first couple of questions. I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to chuck this in, just feed it to him and just see if he picks up on the hint.
Yeah, no, I was, and because it was a Conti Cup game as well, right? So there was like maybe some chance of rotation, and I was sitting there going, please don't, just play them both. kind of just looking to wrap up a bit now. I guess a question for both of you. Is there a current player that you could see having a really good media career after their playing days if they wanted to? Like, are there any future Alex Scotts in our ranks, do you think?
I think, to be honest, within the Arsenal Women's squad, we've got a lot of very talented players in the squad from a media perspective. You know, like Lisa Evans has become very popular online for her content with We Play Strong. I know Louise Quinn has done a lot of punditry on Irish TV, joined us on Arsenal Nation Live, and as Max mentioned earlier, joined him on commentary when she was out injured as well. And obviously Kim is very switched on when it comes to talking tactics and the way she sees the game too. I guess for me, one of the players who I think could perhaps have a career in the media is Leah Williamson. I think, as those who follow Arsenal Women know, Leah is incredibly well-spoken, and over the years has given us some really, really good interviews on just about every topic possible. You know, she can discuss the emotions of a game and give really strong tactical insight within a minute of basically stepping off the pitch, which I can imagine is not easy to do. And she can also just jump into an interview about some of the work that we do with Arsenal in the community and our foundation, basically without being prompted. And more recently, just even for my dissertation, I was looking into the relationship between the 2019 World Cup on the success of the current WSL season. And again, with little to no time for Leah to get any research done, jumped on and gave me a half hour interview of some really good stuff. So yeah, I think with the way that Leah certainly speaks in her interviews and carries herself and how articulate she is, that could, yeah, perhaps have a career in the media after life after football.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Aidan says. We're really lucky as a media team to have so many players within a first team setup who are just really happy to help out. Yeah, he mentions Kim, Lisa, Viv. Viv's great as well. I know when she's on the pitch, she doesn't look like she's too happy all the time. But every time we've dealt with her, she's delighted to get involved and give us as much help as possible. Danielle van der Donk, obviously. I mean, I would struggle to look at the current Arsenal women's squad and go, all right, they're a nightmare to deal with, because none of them are. They're all absolutely brilliant with us. And just to build on Aidan's point there about Leah, I've been responsible for writing the In My Own Words pieces that you might find on arsenal.com, and I remember doing one with Leah, and it started off as just an interview about her making her full debut for England. So just went over to her with a dictaphone at the training ground one day and just, you know, can you give us just 2 minutes on what it was like? So she started talking, and then we got to the end of the interview, and she went, oh, actually, I've got a picture of something that my mum gave me, and it was a playing card with the number 6 on it. So I said, oh, what's the meaning behind that then? So she started telling me, and it was obviously I'd stopped dictaphoning at this point, and she gave me some absolute gold, and I was furious with myself that I hadn't picked this up in an interview situation. So I said to her, look, Leah, I'd love to pick this up again with you and talk to you about it. She was like, oh, okay, well, I'll tell you what, well, how about I send you through just a message about what this means to me and everything, and then you can write it up, and then if we need any extra quotes, then you can always contact me and we can work it out from there. Later that night, so about 4 hours later, she'd sent me almost a dissertation length essay on what that shirt meant to her. So all I needed to do really was just, you know, tidy it up a tiny bit. I mean, it was pretty much written out like anything you'd find in a newspaper column anyway. It was brilliantly done. And then she sent me all the pictures to go with it as well. So we put it out, and it was probably one of our most successful, in my own words, pieces to this day. And that's just because Leo really understood the format. So, you know, all of our players are media savvy, but I think if you're looking for the next Alex Scott, then Leah Williamson.
Yeah, and that's really nice because she happens to feature on this episode. And by the way,
there you are, Tim.
Yeah, and by the way, one of the I did like a quick fire Q&A, and not to give too much away because it's coming up after this, but actually I asked her who she thinks is most likely to be a manager in the current squad, and she said Viv, which actually surprised me. But when I thought about it, I thought no, that makes sense. But yeah, I mean I completely agree. Like, I mean for us on our site, and for you guys, Leah's gold as well, because she grew up as an Arsenal fan as well, you know, so, and you know, got that very, very kind of legitimate backstory as well, which is just, you know, content dynamite. Just a final question before I let you go for you both, maybe a short one. Have either of you made like an embarrassing error in putting out content? So whether that's a tweet or whether that's like a faux pas with a player, is there anything that kind of makes you cringe a little bit?
Definitely. I think, Tim, there was that game we were at where I think everyone inside the press box believed that Louise Quinn had scored a goal. Yes. And instead I robbed our 17-year-old academy prospect of a hat-trick. So I felt pretty awful for that one. And then I remember there was an under-23s game with it was so much fog. It was unbelievable when it was called off at half-time. And right before the break, Dinos Mavropanos scored a goal. And everyone in the press box didn't have a single clue. We didn't announce the score for a good 15 minutes. And I think that's just one of those things. It happens. It happens on social media. And I think instead of trying to brush it under the carpet and letting everyone online rip you in the replies for not getting it right, I think often it's better to just kind of acknowledge those things, use it to your advantage, have a bit of fun, poke some fun at yourself. And yeah. You know, I think that's the best way to handle it because it will happen.
And I have to take responsibility for the Ruby Grant one because it was me who said Louise Quinn had scored when she hadn't. What about you, Max?
How long have you got? quite a few. I guess like the one that I remember the most is goes back to probably 2014. So when we put the student, who at that point was me, in charge of tweeting to 11 million followers at that time, and I think I was only in my second month or something, and this definitely illustrates just how far we've come as a social media team since. But I remember Danny Welbeck scoring for England, and obviously he just signed for Arsenal at the time, so we wanted to put out a congratulations tweet for him. I was watching the game with some friends, and I think he maybe scored the opener or something like that. So obviously got a bit excitable, thought, oh, I'm on the Arsenal Twitter account. Put out a picture of him with just the caption, "That guy." And we just got absolutely battered in the replies. And I just remember thinking, oh, hang on. Oh, maybe I need to be a bit more serious with this one. I remember texting my boss at the time just saying, mate, I'm so sorry. I really, really messed up here. And him coming back and just saying, no, it's absolutely nothing. But I remember losing some sleep that night over it because social media back then was taken very, very seriously from club channels. Whereas now, if we just put out, you know, Danny Welbeck scored for England, doesn't matter. No one would care. There's no emotion behind it. In terms of getting players mixed up, there's been a few of them. Most notably was when I believe it was I'm going to make an even bigger fool of myself by getting this one wrong as well now. there was a team playing at the Emirates and they ran through on goal and fortunately Czech saved it. So I put out a tweet without even checking the team sheet just because I thought, well, I know who that player is. And I put in, you know, Czech saves from Ayew. It turned out that team had sold Ayew 6 months before. So, yeah, got that one completely wrong. Immediately realised my mistake. So when we had all of the fans tweeting us back, then, I mean, like Aidan says, you just got to own it. So, yeah, just ended up putting a load of glasses emojis back to them. So, yeah, I didn't really have anything to say back other than, just whenever you're putting out a tweet, just make sure that you make sure you double check stuff. In fact, while I remember, probably the most iconic one, certainly from recent years, has been the Oxlade-Chamberlain team sheet. I don't know if you saw that one doing the rounds.
I don't think so.
So our design team had basically come up with this. They had come up with this template for the team sheet. So obviously the longest name on the team sheet would be Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. So just to make sure that we could fit the text in all of the boxes on this team sheet, they'd put as the starting text, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain everywhere. So I went into this team sheet, I changed it all, made sure that the formation was right and everything like that, had all the right names on it, checked over it once, absolutely fine, checked over it again, absolutely fine, clicked and dragged it into the tweet box, put out a tweet. The problem was I dragged the template in there instead of the actual version. So we had a team of 18 Alex Oxlade shanks.
Oh dear. I think, obviously I don't go out to quite the size of audience that you guys do, but I guess I'm not sure if this counts as a faux pas, and I feel comfortable saying this because I think people know Viv's sense of humour, but after the Brighton game earlier this season, the heavens absolutely opened about 2 minutes before full time, and people who've been to Boreham Wood know that the mix zone is completely open, and I wanted to speak to Vivian Miedema in the pouring rain, and you know that's quite a nerve-wracking moment anyway, trying to get a player to stop on their way into the dressing room. And I stopped Viv and she stopped, and I had an umbrella and I said, do you want to get under that umbrella? And she said, no, I want to go inside. and you know Viv, right? She's got a very dry sense of humour, and she was only joking, but that was kind of sorry about that, mate.
Yeah.
But there we go. Gentlemen, I've taken far too much of your time, but that was absolutely fascinating. Really, really appreciate that. Thank you both.
Oh, absolute pleasure, Tim. Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, cheers for having us on, Tim, anytime.
Thanks again to Max and Aidan, and I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did, and found it as revealing and as insightful as I did. I kind of sit next to Aidan at pretty much every Arsenal women's game, and never really had that level of conversation about the content that Arsenal produce. As I said at the outset, and as we said during the interview, we're also going to hear from Leah Williamson now with a kind of quick fire Q&A about her teammates. Who does she think would win in a fight? Fairly surprising answer to that one. Who would she vote for as Prime Minister? Who would she most like on her team in a pub quiz? As well, who's the best dressed? Just kind of silly questions like that. But hopefully quite insightful about some of her teammates, so that's coming next.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog.
Okay, Leah, quick fire. 19 questions in your case about your teammates. Be as frank as you like. Who is the best dressed?
Me. If not me, Jordan Nobbs.
Fair enough. And the worst dressed?
The worst dressed. Good question. This isn't very quick fire, is it? I'll have to give it to Viv. Viv doesn't care what she wears. She always comes in and, I mean, I think she still looks cool, but you might not say it all matches.
Fair. Who's the best singer in the squad?
I don't actually think we have any singers. Kim Little always sings quietly, and I've had a debate with Jordan about this. I don't know whether or not it's the best in the squad, but I think she can hold a tune, and I think she's keeping this big secret.
Fair enough. And who's the worst singer?
The worst singer is Jill. She's always singing as well. I actually have to tell her this.
Fair enough. Who is the most likely to become a football manager when they retire?
Most likely to become a football manager? That's probably a toss-up between Viv and Jordan.
Fair, okay. Who's the most likely to cry at a film?
Most likely to cry at a film? Maybe Beth.
Okay.
Probably me, if I'm being totally honest. I cry at everything, but... Dan Carter always cries. She pretends she doesn't, but she does.
Fair enough. Something in the eye. Who's the best trainer?
Sorry, say that one again.
The best trainer.
The best trainer, Kim Little, without a shadow of a doubt.
Fair. And the worst trainer?
Jill.
Fair.
Jill's always here for a good time, not a long time.
Fair enough. I thought you were going to say Viv there, but okay.
Do you know what? Either of them.
And who's the biggest joker in the squad?
The biggest joker, Lisa. She's always trying to prank people, and especially catching it on camera as well.
And if you had to vote for one of your teammates to be Prime Minister of the UK, who would it be?
It's a hard one. I mean, Viv has some brilliant ideas, but she'd be a bit brutal with her implementing it. But I'd have to give it Captain Kim, wouldn't I?
Fair enough.
Most political, I think, yeah.
And I suspect your answer to this question might be the same, but if one of your teammates had to take a penalty to save your life, who would it be?
To save my life?
Yeah,
it's got to be Kim. She's our penalty taker.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Who's?
I don't think I trust anybody to save my life, but I'd give it to Kim, the closest.
I asked Kim that question about 7 years ago, and she said Kelly Smith, which, you know, I think that's fair enough. But obviously she's not an option anymore. So who's the loudest in the squad?
The loudest? Beth Mead.
Okay.
Always talking.
And who's the quietest?
The quietest. Maybe Vicky Schnellebeck. She's just quietly goes about her business.
And who swears the most?
Swears the most? Me.
Fair enough. I thought that was going to be DVD, actually. Although I remember Kim dropping an F-bomb on BT Sport, which was great. But...
it's my favourite of all time, yeah.
Anna, who would you want on your team at a pub quiz?
Viv, very clever.
Okay.
But we're on a circulation of the same players here, aren't we?
there are some themes developing. Okay, what about this one? Who's the hardest? So who would you least like to fight?
The hardest? Probably Manu. I would not like to get in a fight with Manu. She's very calm, never aggressive, but I think if she needed to switch, I think she could, and she's probably the strongest.
Fair enough, fair enough. And we already know who you supported growing up, and I kind of know the answer to this one as well, but who was your favourite player growing up?
Women's, Kelly Smith.
Yeah.
Men, I always had Thierry Henry on my back, but yeah, Kelly Smith takes the trophy.
Yep, I think that's fair enough. I think that goes for a lot of us. Leah, thanks so much for that. That was very illuminating. And yeah, hopefully one or two of these will go up for Prime Minister one day, or, you know, help you win a pub quiz.
I hope so.
And that's it for this month's episode. Huge thank you to Max and Aidan from Arsenal.com, and of course Leah Williamson for her time, and you'll be hearing more from Leah on the next episode. Access to players isn't entirely cut off, so I'll keep dropping some messages and going cap in hand to some of the players, and hopefully keep them appearing on these podcasts as and when they appear, and we'll try and keep these podcasts as regular as we can during this kind of no football period. But hope you really enjoyed that. And we'll be out with another one featuring Jen O'Neill and Leah Williamson in about a week's time.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.